Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 500, where the swear words are. This is instantly wild, not just once, but 500 times and counting. We've got all the wonderful things you've come to love and expect from 500 shows, including jokes, advisory material, and things for your classroom. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, for 500 shows running.
Oh my goodness.
Sean Mecker.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am fine. You know, you think we'd do something special for the 500th show?
Yeah. Yeah. What did you plan?
Then you would think wrong.
Because I didn't.
Oh, but I do have a friend who wrote a biography, an autobiography.
You did.
He did. And then he was using some glue, and that whole thing just got stuck to him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's his story, and he's sticking to it.
Sure is, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's another thought for you. What does unlockable mean?
Unlockable? Well, the obvious, right? No, that doesn't, can't, not locked.
Well, what is the obvious? Unlockable could mean that you can't lock it, but it also could mean that it can't be, that it can be unlocked.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
It is unlockable. It can be unlocked. Or it is unlockable. It can't be locked. These are things that I think of and things that I would share with middle school students so they could think of them too. Oh, there's big news out of Texas, by the way.
Big news. When it's not, everything's big in Texas.
That's right. The governor of Texas has made it a crime to eat apple pie with ice cream.
Oh, goodness.
Really? In order to cut down on obesity.
Okay.
Yeah, there was thousands of protesters out there. They're carrying signs. Remember the a la mode. Remember the a la mode. You need to have a little historical context in order for some of these jokes to make fun.
That's a San Antonio joke right there, yeah.
That's yep. They're coming for you. No matter how much you push the envelope, it's still stationary.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I was working on my computer, and I had a whole bunch of windows open. So I had to subscribe to a show on NPR by Terry Gross.
Oh, yes, Terry Gross.
Yeah, that's right. I had a bunch of windows open, and I needed some fresh air.
I see what you did there.
Hey, did you follow directions on last Thursday?
Yes, I rinsed and I repeated.
No.
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 Today is Saturday, March 6th.
Yeah.
So yesterday, Friday, would be March 5th. So Thursday would be March 4th. So follow directions? Did you March 4th?
No, I'm under COVID quarantine, so.
You know, I used to be afraid of speed bumps.
Oh?
Yeah, I'm slowly getting over it.
Ah, I gotcha. Okay.
I had some friends, Mike. More coffee. My friends had a clam dinner without me.
Oh.
Yeah, I told them they were shellfish.
Indeed. Indeed.
And then let us, we have a recipe over for you, by the way, on middleschoolmatters.com. It is a Midwestern recipe. It's a visual recipe, but I think you will enjoy it. And then there is also a joke specifically for Sean and Zoom and employees on middleschoolmatters.com as well. So, I just got a new job, by the way.
You did. Congratulations.
Senior director at Old McDonald's Farm.
Really?
I'm now the CIEIO.
Gotcha.
You know, there was a middle schooler who tried to order a snake off the internet.
Did it finally get off the internet?
What arrived was a box of feather scarves.
Oh.
Yeah, it looks like a boa constrictor.
Yeah. Yep.
Boa. Yeah. Okay. All right. You know, sometimes we just like to make sure the setup for science is right there. Come in from a low point.
Yep.
And the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski has a great project this time called Instant Wild. And this is really neat. This is bringing you live images and cameras from around the world. Costa Rica. Yeah, and this is one of those neat things that kids can get involved in, can contribute to other places, and helps give them a sense of place and to be involved and do some good as well. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the January-February 2021 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I was reading the Citizen Science section written by Jill Nugent, and she wrote an article entitled A Window to the Wild, and it's all about a citizen science project entitled Instant Wild, and you can learn more about this project by visiting their website at instantwild.zsl.org. Instant Wild, or Conservation at Your Fingertips, brings real-time feeds of wildlife from around the globe directly into homes and classrooms. The Zoological Society of London launched Instant Wild nearly a decade ago to help researchers analyze data from camera traps and to engage the world in wildlife conservation through citizen science. Recently, National Geographic became a partner of Instant Wild, and one of the first projects associated with the partnership is the OSA Camera Trap Network in Costa Rica. In the Instant Wild OSA Camera Trap Network project, students are invited to monitor and track wild cats, including jaguars, ocelots, and puma, as well as their prey, such as collared peccary. The online citizen science project also monitors other large mammals, such as tapirs. The monitoring area covered by the OSA Camera Trap Network spans two Costa Rican national parks, as well as a forest reserve corridor that connects the two parks. Instant Wild provides educators with a budget-friendly option to integrate high-impact, authentic science in the classroom. Learners can engage in the online project from wherever they are located. Students will have the opportunity to take part in 21st century conservation research and will gain a glimpse into wild spaces around the globe while helping researchers analyze data at scale to address pressing conservation questions relating to some of the planet's most endangered wildlife species. The project goal is to help researchers monitor the abundance of wild cat species and their prey in Costa Rica's OSA Peninsular area. The student task is to contribute to science and learn more about wildlife species, and the most appropriate science discipline is life and environmental science. Instant Wild images are generated from motion-triggered camera traps deployed in natural areas around the globe. When an animal passes by a camera, the device takes a photo that's shared in real time for identification. In some remote areas where connectivity can be a challenge, field researchers will upload batches of images for identification and review by citizen scientists. There are nearly 130,000 images in the OSA Camera Trap Network project. Students will help identify the wildlife in the images. Best guesses are acceptable, and although no prior experience is needed, an online tutorial is available. Weather impacts can sometimes cause cloudy images. In these instances, participants can tag photos to indicate that an animal is not visible in the image. Students can start identifying species online immediately without an account. However, by creating an account and logging in, they will be able to accumulate points and even earn badges for their work. Badges are earned at milestones such as the number of endangered species seen and the total number of identifications made over time. Instant Wild utilizes an algorithm that operates on a consensus basis. When there are 10 matching species level identifications for an image, the system will accept the agreed upon species identification. In other words, if 10 participants identify an image as an ocelot, the system will accept the species identification from the consensus among the 10 identical identifications. Collective community effort serves as the driver for species identifications. Registered participants receive accuracy scores, and over time, the accuracy score will increase when the number of species identifications play a role in positive consensus identifications. It's important to note that Instant Wild participant accounts that have not been active for 5 months will be removed and inactivated. If you'd like to learn more about this program, don't forget that you can visit instantwild.zsl.org. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
I just can't say how much we appreciate the work and the great stuff that Dave brings. And he's been around for, geez, most of the 500 shows, I think.
So, yeah, I think you're right.
You know? So we do really appreciate him and what he brings to the show. And please do check out the links on middleschoolmatters.com. We usually have a link to his stuff as well. So, all right. So how are things going? There's a lot of schools are now going back to some kind of in-person learning at this point. The governor of Michigan, for example, came out and basically said, go back to school at least somehow, somewhat. And President Biden has basically come out and said, we want schools to open. And so there's a lot of pressure around the country to have schools either reopen or continue to stay open. And there's been just a lot of there's a lot of angst about that. There's been a couple places that opened and then had to shut back down really quick because of cases. There's been a lot of schools that have been in school, have been in all year and have continued to be open as well. So there's a whole mix of places out there. But we're seeing more and more people come, more and more schools offering some kind of in-person experience for kids. And I don't think you are back yet, correct?
We are not. That's true. We are not. We've been out all year long. And by comparison, we've heard stories from districts around us that have been doing the yo-yo effect where they're in, they're out, they're in, they're out, yeah. They're in, they're out, right? Mm-hmm. And they've been describing that as a nightmare. And I was talking with my assistant principal on Friday, and he made a really good point. He said, look, he says, kids and middle schoolers in particular crave structure. And if you're constantly yo-yoing, then you're constantly changing the structure and the framework and how the kids operate. And that doesn't do anybody any service. And I think he's right. So us staying out, I think, has been part of also understanding the nature of kids, and not just middle school kids, but students in general. And I get that, you know, for some kids, the social aspect of school and getting back into school is a huge thing. And we've done some things to try to help that. But by the same token, there's a lot of kids that when I leave school, I go to school and teach right from my classroom, which is now right now apparently my studio, not my classroom. But there's a city park right outside the parking lot, back door where the parking lot is. There's a city park, and the kids are over there all the time with each other, socializing. So I don't know that we're lacking the social aspect of things, like, because they're doing it anyway. But yeah, we're out, and we'll see. Monday at the board meeting, we find out if we're still out for another month, because they're doing this on a month-by-month basis. And
That's one of the things for Michigan is, Michigan by law, they have every 30 days, basically, the school board has to say. Yeah.
Yeah, so if we're out for another month, and again, this is an interesting point that the assistant principal brought up. When we get back from spring break, there are 21 instructional days left. All the rest are taken up by testing.
Wow.
You know, where's the tipping point on how we structure and format the rest of the year?
Can all of the testing be done remotely, or does any of the testing have to be done in person?
Well, that's interesting, because the federal government has said that states could put off the testing until the fall, or they could do it sometime in the summer by bringing the kids in and letting the kids take the test by coming in and taking the test, you know, over summer break, where they're not going to come in anyway. That would be establishing a whole different culture, wouldn't it? Or they could just do the testing, and the state of Michigan has said, no, the testing has to be done in the building, in person. Now, we can do NWA testing at distance, and we've done that in the past. We got one more week of that coming up in April. But the MSTEP has to be done in person, and the PSAT, which our 8th graders had to take the PSAT, our 11th graders take the SAT, that has to be done in person. So we're making plans for that. So, for example, on the PSAT days, our 8th graders are coming into the gym, and we're going to have a setup with tables filling the gym, just like they do at the high school for the big tests there. Mm-hmm. And the kids will come in, they'll have their own table, they'll take their test, and they'll all go out, you know, they'll come in one door and go out another door. And then we get to clean tables and then chairs and then everything else. And then the second batch of kids come in, so that we have the first half of the day is half the eighth graders. And the second half of the day is the rest of the eighth graders. And they'll come in and take the test. And then they'll take both portions of the test, you know, one on one day, one on the next day. And then they're done. So in 2 days, we can have the entire eighth grade tested. But that means everybody, the entire staff, has to be there to monitor and to help deliver and administer the test. Which means that now that we have computers for every kid, that doesn't mean that learning has to stop, though. It means that we can now assign asynchronous assignments to our 7th and 6th graders, and they can work on those while we're helping the 8th grade kids. By the same token, our 7th grade and our 6th grade kids are going to do the same thing when they take their MSTEP test, their state test, right. Except I think we haven't split between the gym and the cafeteria. And so between the two of them, you know, it should only take us a couple days to get it done. Which is remarkable, considering it takes us 3 or 4 days when the kids are in person and in school. And, you know, opportunities, is it an opportunity or a crisis, right? So maybe we'll do things differently going forward based on this, because now we have other options with the Chromebooks now in our possession. So we're going to do things that way. PSAT and MSTEP have to be taken in person, is what we've been told. What about you guys?
We have actually just started bringing kids back. So we brought K through 2 back and 6th graders and 9th graders. And then next week we're going to bring in 3rd graders and 7th graders and 10th graders, I think it is. And then just keep adding in. So there's more and more available. One of the things in not specifically in my district, but talking to teachers around is it's been interesting as to the attendance. This is almost the opposite of the Field of Dreams. If you build it, they may not come. And especially some of the high schoolers. I've been hearing from high schoolers through my network, high school teachers, that they're ending up with like 2 and 3 kids in the classroom. They were concerned about how they were going to socially distance kids, right? And then some of them have had like 2 and 3 kids show up, and they were like, "How am I going to fit 15 kids in this class and have 6 feet between them?" And as it turns out, when you only have 2 or 3 kids in the classroom, you can socially distance at 6 feet with very little issue. So that's been interesting as well. And some of them were reaching out, and again, I've heard mostly from high school kids, not as many middle school, but the high school kids are like, "Hi, I kind of like sleeping in, and I kind of like not having to get dressed until later in the morning. I can wear my jammies and hang out on my, I can recline, and I like this." And I have heard the same thing from some middle school teachers as well. That some of the kids have just like, "Thank you, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, but I'm good. I kind of like this." So
that's interesting. So they voted with their feet whether or not they're going to do it in person or not, despite what. That's interesting. So that's interesting. So let me ask this then. So would this be an opportunity? Let's think about this for a moment. If you offered students the opportunity to do distance learning, and then we adjust it based on what we understand about the brain and the middle school brain, and we say, "Fine, sleep in. Class isn't going to start till 9 or 9:30. And it's going to go until about 2-3 in the afternoon. And then we're going to pick it up again around 6 and go to 8. Because the middle school brain is really active later in the morning, and then it's active early in the evening, but it has that dead zone right in the middle of the day. And then I'm not willing to teach between 8 and 11 o'clock when I know their brains are like super active, because I have to work with the equipment that sits between my ears, right? And I'm not designed that way right now. But what I'm thinking is this an opportunity to reframe the day based on what we know from brain research says these kids need? Because now you're not driven by buses and you're not driven by a lunch schedule.
Correct. And this is one of the overarching conversations that I'm also seeing, because I'm seeing a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of teachers and administrators who are saying, with kids coming back, let's get back to normal. Let's get back to what we had. Let's get back to the world before March 2020, right? And then there's a whole bunch of other people who are going, "Hey, whoa, time out here, time out. We were saying in February of 2020 that we needed to make changes in education. We needed to reformat what education was about and how we were delivering it. And how about now? How about we really do that now? We broke the cycle. We are doing something different. We not because we wanted to, because it was thrust upon us. What if we take that opportunity and we truly do something different? And what would that look like and feel like and be and all that good stuff? And as you brought up, you know, what if you had a whole different schedule? What if kids, you know, were responsible for, you know, the some kind of synchronous opportunity would be late in the morning, early in the afternoon, and then there's more things that they have to do. But could we break the idea of seat time as well? Because right now, so much of what we do is generated on seat time. The state of our state dictates that kids attend for X number of hours and Y number of days. What if we broke that model and instead said, you know, we're going to do something different. It's going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's going to be different. And those are the conflicting conversations that I'm hearing at this point. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, which one wins. You know, what happens going forward? Do we return to the conditions that we had before? I mean, the state of Michigan is already talking about, quote, adding hours on.
Right.
Right?
In the fall. Yeah.
And whether they add them in the summer or whether they add them to the beginning of next year or the end of next year or what, they're already talking about adding hours. And is that adding hours, is that the right concept to have as well? And I don't know. I honestly don't know which way that's going to go. All right. So this has been a fun show so far.
The one with the bugs.
Hopefully you don't notice that we've had a couple of things happen here. But
it's been eventful.
We discussed the idea of, you know, some kids aren't coming back. And what does that look like? And what should that look like? Do we return? Do we return to what was? Do we create what was? Do we create something different? Virtual academies are something that have existed in the past. Mm-hmm. Not all of them were all that successful, let's say. And we're in different times now. Kids and families have made some adjustments to learning from home. And what does that mean? What does that mean for them? What does that mean for us? For teachers have been creating a curriculum as they've been instructing it without a lot of professional development, without a lot of support necessarily. And what does that mean? What are the effects of that, right? So there's a lot of research out there about timing and what is good for kids and when the brain is more active and not active and some of those things. Do we take that into consideration and create something that's new and different? Or do we just go back to what was? And you know, or is there some kind of combination thereof? Do we create some virtual academies that are different, that do meet the needs of the kids? And what does that look like? And what tools do we use to do that? Again, a lot of teachers did not have a lot of training under tons of stress. So you adopt the thing that is, quote, easiest to use, right? May not be the most effective, but it's the easiest to use. And that ease of use carries a lot of weight right now, and always does, quite frankly. You know, lower barrier of entry is something that's desirable. But would teachers be willing to invest in learning some of those tools, which would make the experience for kids more powerful? And then what about funding? How do we fund this? As we were talking about Michigan, and Michigan funds based off of how many hours that you are in session. So
Michigan also allows for seat time waivers, though, too.
They do.
And I wonder if you could get a seat time waiver for doing something like this, especially if you're going to frame it in the terms of we're trying something new and innovative, and there are provisions for trying new and innovative things. However, it's easier for some schools to do it than others based on the way that the law is constructed. But I think maybe we don't call them virtual schools. Maybe we call them experimental schools, which in China, what they do is a school that is open to trying ideas and new things. They just come right out and tell the parents, look, this is an experimental school. So your kids are going to be exposed to new and different. I think we look at things like, research from middle level ed. How can we take and use some of those things and address those in a virtual manner? It's going to look very, very different, because you can't do necessarily, four physical corners, that the physical component of some of the activities. You're not going to be doing that physical part. And then I like the idea that you brought up, where you say, look, let's take rooms and turn them into studios. And, some days a week they're at home, and maybe once a week they're in the building for, required attendance activity, or I'm thinking like in science class, Monday's your lab day, Wednesday's your lab day, Friday's your lab day.
Right.
But you could do what you'd call them labs. The in-classroom experience is, you'd say, look, on such and such a day of the week, you're going to come in for a lab. The rest of the week, we're going to be virtual.
Or if they need specific support. And there are some schools that have tried some similar things, I know, and it's been to varying degrees of success. And obviously, it's not something that's, taken off like wildfire across school districts. But I know there's a school district in Michigan that several years ago was doing kind of a blended learning thing, where the kids would come on some days and some days would work from home, would work from wherever they were. And this was before the pandemic. I don't know how much training and how much development they were able to do with that, though, because there seemed to be mixed results. I'm not part of that district. I am basing this on conferences and teachers that I talked to who were at that district. And the conference presentation was one thing, and talking closely to the teachers was kind of another. And it's not that anything, when you do something that's that different, is going to be perfect right away, right? And nothing is perfect anyway. But I think we also need to be honest about what are the advantages and disadvantages of all of our models as well. So there are things we can do, and there are things that other people have tried, that some people have tried. But I know that we have a lot of tools and we have a lot of knowledge. We understand the way that kids work. We understand the way that things really, really can work. But putting it all together, that's the secret sauce, right? So
right.
Could you, instead of having a classroom, do you have a studio? And then you also have a room where kids can come and just work if they want to. And I think about colleges. One of the big pushes on colleges was to make things more attractive and livable and flexible, right? A lot of colleges really upped that social gathering area, whatever they called it. They called it a variety of things.
But Commons, really, union.
Yeah, right. But really, it was a place where you could go and you could hang out and you could do some work. You could talk to your friends. You could do different things. It was a multiple function area. Could schools kind of create that and then have studios or and then also have, you know, the library where you go for quiet studies time? And instead of kids being assigned to Mr. McGregor in room 203 from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, they have this thing to do. And if they want to show up, Mr. McGregor is available. And, you know, he can help. If 20 kids show up, he can help those 20 kids. If two kids show up, he can help those two kids. And, you know, how do you do that as well? So this is one of those things that just fascinates me at this time. we have the opportunity to be at a tipping point, but are we going to be at a tipping point is the question. And, you know, where do we tip? Do we tip back to replicating exactly what we did before? Do we tip to, hey, these four things worked really well with asynchronous learning, and now I know how to do some of asynchronous learning, and I know that kids responded this way, and they learned how to do this that way, then I can use that and leverage that. So the other thing that kind of fascinates me is there's the conversation of learning loss or learning through loss. they should call learning through loss, because there's a lot of kids who have literally lost family members.
It's true. Yeah, during this time period, it's been rough on the kids. I think we also think about what kinds of opportunities. Like, for example, we have a student in eighth grade this year, but last year he was a walking disaster. He was his own worst enemy, and there was nothing you could do to help that poor kid because he was out to destroy himself. Right. Mm-hmm. And this year he got a student month award, and I went and I questioned the person who said, "Yeah, this is a great kid." I pulled him aside and said, "We're talking about this kid, right?
We are talking. We're talking about this first name and this last name and this student number, correct?"
Also known as the runner, right?
AKA.
Yeah. What do you mean the runner? Because that's what he did last year. He would just run out of class and go. You're like head for the door and out the door going nowhere. And he used to do that? Yeah, he used to do that. Well, he's not like that now. And it's true. He's not like that now. He's a completely different kid because this is actually meeting his needs in a very appropriate way. And we're seeing that with a number of kids that, you know, there are some that have been accused or not accused. They're charged in court for threatening adults with physical violent harm. And they are not that way when they are doing this brand of learning. About 25 years ago, I got hired by a school out in Ionia, Michigan, called Noah Webster Academy. And we did distance learning entirely over the phone. We had computers, okay, and we had a database and that sort of thing, but we didn't have the internet. And we had, like I said, the telephone, we had textbooks, we had reference books, we had, you know, all kinds of things to help us, but we really didn't have the internet per se. We piloted Michigan State's distance learning program with them. Where the video transfer rate was a whopping 6 frames per minute.
Per minute. Wow.
Per minute. Yep. So you got all kinds of funky faces going on when you're trying to talk. The audio was real time, but the pictures were so not good. But I see the concept that they came up with then, I think, is something that could be tweaked and modified for now. We were told then by Robert Shiller, the state superintendent at the time, that they expected we would get close to 10,000 students if we went completely virtual. And we did this. We would get close to 10,000 students instantly. And they suspected there were close to as many as 100,000 students in the state of Michigan that were, quote unquote, homeschooled or not in a traditional school setting. And they said, you get 10% of those, we can't afford to pay you. And that's why we don't want you to succeed. We're like, but they said, no, it's about money. We don't knock what you're doing. It's a great idea, but we can't pay you. But now I think we have the opportunity to, it's been 25 years, right? But I think now we have the opportunity to revisit that and go, now what can we do, right? And I think we can. I'm not saying this is for everybody, by no means. Based on my experience working with Noah Webster Academy, it was really great for these special ed kids who could take as much time as they needed. And it was really great for our exceptional kids who felt we were going way too slow and they needed to be turned loose and go because they wanted to go long and deep, right? And they could in this situation where they could just drill down into all different kinds of topics and explore and expand what their knowledge is. And I think that's the creative side of what we could do here with this is saying, look, let's take a look at it from the middle school perspective. We got kids who need to explore a variety of different things, options, to kind of get an idea of where they want to go and what they want to do and study in the future. And I think this is an opportunity we have to say. It's like a smorgasbord of exploratory studies we could do. Mm-hmm. And kids can then find out, you know, this is the career path I need to take. These are the things I need to focus on in order to get to where I want to go. By the same token, I think we can build a broader learning experience for them, a true liberal arts style of education this way, to give them a broadened, a depth of knowledge. But then the things that they're super interested in, they can drill deeper into to hopefully discover a vocation. So that's a soapbox. And obviously, I'm dreaming here. I don't expect this to be reality, but
that's the thing that's one of the things that's exciting for me, I think, is to remember that this wouldn't be there's not a single answer in education, you know?
Right.
Too frequently, we're looking for the silver bullet, and there is not a silver bullet. I guess if you were to ask me what the silver bullet is, I would say, you know what? It is a highly trained, highly caring teacher who can take all of these other tools that we have and utilize them as appropriate. And this, for me, is one of those things, is that I don't think this would benefit every kid. I don't think every school should be remote. That's not at all what I think. I do think that having those tools in your toolbox, and for some kids, it working out, that would be awesome. That would be really awesome. And, you know, part of what I was bringing up is the whole idea of learning loss and who counts the learning loss. What is learning loss? Is that the standardized testing group, which doesn't want to become irrelevant? You know, let's be honest here. They make money by everybody believing that they are completely objective and they're the answer to what's going on. That's in their interest to continue that going, right? So we just have to acknowledge that. And I think it's beneficial to understand what they do provide, the good parts that they bring in, and the potential challenges that they bring in as well. So You shared a story of Moodle reporting early in the pre-show today, And I was wondering, because one of the things that we look at, you know, if we're looking at kids and what kids are doing, is sometimes teachers need to account for what kids do and don't do. And would you be willing to share part of the, some of the aspects of the reporting with Moodle that you found beneficial?
Sure. So I had a parent ask if, you know, I had done any modifications for their student. And of course I had, but obviously she can't get in to see her. She doesn't have a parent access port to see the thing. So I took screenshots, and Moodle is a wonderful tool for doing things like reporting out information. Yep. It keeps wonderful logs about what time they logged in and how much time they spend on assignments and which assignment they spent it on. And, you know, it gives you all this wonderful granular detail that could be overwhelming, but it puts it in nice little reports that you can look at and go, see, you kind of get it. You can see the picture. So her student wasn't doing anything. And so let's just be straight up with that. But, you know, it's one thing to go to a parent and go, yeah, your kid just ain't showing up to class. Right. Mm-hmm. Because that's really easy for the parent to go, yeah, well, you too. Right. And
yeah,
you don't want to do that. So I thought, well, let's give the parent some of these reports to maybe go to the student and go, tell me about this. Now, why did Mr. McGurk give me this? So I printed a report saying when and how long did they log on? And it gave me this nice, wonderful bar graph. And so I went to the spots where there was no bar, but there was a date. And I used Snagit, and I simply drew arrows saying, see this date, this date, this date, this date. They didn't even log into class that date so that they could be working on the things they were working on together. And so there's, you know, five or six arrows across the 2 week span. And all I did was grab a 2 week slot of time and say, show me those 2 weeks, give me these things. I drew in the arrows and then I put that in the email. And then I went down to a list of assignments and accomplishments or completions. Right. And so I went into grades and I said, give me the student's grades for the past, 7-8 weeks. On this particular feature, I didn't even include all of them. I said, let's just talk about the vocab quizzes. And so I was able to print out, you know, how long were they engaged in the activity? Well, they didn't log in, so it was zero. And then
if you don't log in, you're not very engaged.
Yep. And then I, you know, I could say, look, here's how they answered on each question, which of course they didn't log in, so they didn't have any answers. And then I could say, here's the number of times they attempted it. And that was one thing where she said, you know, how many times can they attempt it? And I showed them, I said, in the reports, it'll say, allows unlimited attempts for this student. And then you can tell them, look, and then I set up a timer for the kids. They can take it anytime on Friday. They don't have to take it in class. They can take it anytime they want on Friday. Mm-hmm. And so I tell her, he's got this big window. So he can not only take it in the morning, but he could be taking it every single minute from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And, you know, if he's faster, he could take it more than once a minute, I suppose, but as many times as he wants. And then one of the wonderful features I like about Moodle is that I can go in and I use the drag and drop feature for this particular quiz, which means that they don't have to write the definition. They don't have to write anything. They simply have to use the visual acuity to determine if that term lines up with that definition. And then one of the things that I can do to modify it for my students is that I can designate within the same question, I can say, these two are a pair, these two are a pair, these two are a pair, and I've got 10 terms. Mm-hmm. And so what it does is it color codes the options to the choices up above. And so you can't drag a blue answer into a pink box. It'll pop it right down and go, no, no, no. Right. And so you're forced between two choices. I can still randomize those choices within those two. Mm-hmm. But a regular test for a regular student is now modified for a modified test for a student simply by doing a couple clicks saying, this is group A, this is group B, this is group C, this is group D.
And that's one of the things that I think come when we talk about constructs and we talk about tools and that ability to provide those opportunities for kids that are appropriate, because not everything should look exactly the same for every kid. And that's where that silver bullet of a excellent teacher comes into play. So, and I really love the idea of being able to have data, because now it's not an argument between the parent, the student, and the teacher, or amongst the parent, the student, and the teacher, but it's, well, let's look at this. What's going on here? So it kind of provides that out, that objective area. But then there's also a lot of that reporting is very valuable for teachers, I think. You know, what is going on with these kids, with these students? Why are they not doing well? What is going on with these questions? Is there a question that a lot of kids are getting wrong? Why are they getting it wrong? Do I need to go back and reteach that as well? So I think that reporting really, for me, comes in two different levels. It comes in this can be great when you're working with parents and you're working with kids, because sometimes sitting down with the kid and going, okay, what's going on? You know, you're not doing as well as I know you can do. And looking at the thing and saying, well, look, you're not logging in, or you're logging in every night at 11 o'clock and this is due by 11:59. So you've given yourself 59 minutes to do all this stuff. How come? And so having those conversations, I think, can be pretty powerful. So, yeah. So thank you for sharing that, though, because I think that can really be helpful, because a lot of times it does become, I've been in lots of parent meetings that are he said, she said, and frequently the ability to bring some kind of objective data in to say, okay, look, here it is. Let's talk about that. It just diffuses things. It can diffuse things so positively, and then you can focus on how do you help the kid, because that's really what it's about, right? It's really about how do we help this kid become successful. So, all right, I actually have a couple of advisory activities this week for you.
And running through my head right now is 99 Luftballon.
absolutely. And I don't know if you had a chance to look at these, but this is is some wonderful balloon art. Now, we've probably all seen animals made from balloons, right? This is like next level balloon art with animals. So there is a link to the posting of It's Nice That, but then there's also a link within that page that goes to a YouTube channel. And here's what this is. This is Masayoshi Matsumoto.
Glad you said sorry that one, not that. Me.
I'm sorry.
You're good.
That.
You're better than I am.
Not enough coffee or too much, not sure. But these are very elaborate balloon animals with different color balloons, very realistic. There is a couple here that give me the heebie-jeebies, honestly. But there's also a link to the YouTube channel as well, where it shows you how to make them. And I thought, wow, that could be an awesome thing for advisories to have the kids learn to make some of those balloon animals. because it gives them something to do, and it's a skill that could be useful. Just kind of fun.
Cool.
You know?
Butterfly is awesome.
Oh, there are so many of these that are just phenomenal. There is...
Wow.
The hornet. I mean, I worked in one of the schools that I was principal of the school where our mascot was a hornet. It's like that challenged the kids to make that one, and you know, we could have some of those just laying around, hanging around for a bit, and I think that would be really cool to know how to make that. So the second one that I have is a site called templatemaker.nl. And this is origami. They use paper to make bags and boxes and elliptical boxes and star-shaped boxes and multi-sheet boxes, cake slice box, gemstone box, a card box, gift boxes, star-shaped boxes, heart-shaped boxes. You get the idea? There's a lot of boxes there, along with envelopes and bags and boxes with lids and just all kinds of stuff. So I thought that would be fun as well. So just a couple of advisory activities for things that kids could do and, you know, time for while they're doing that would be, you know, time to talk and create relationships and do things, and they can create things that are usable and a skill that's usable as well. So... All right, let's take a look at the Twitterverse.
Well, yeah, so Twitterverse, I started off with one that I made a response to someone. Mark Ryan, you shared the video of the, you know, what it takes to start a movement, right? Where there's that one guy dancing on the hill, and then another guy joins, and then next thing you know, it turns into a movement. So yep. Mark Ryan at Run Educator, who is a... conference speaker, he's announcing to the world that he's on the hill dancing alone. Comment if you'll join the dance, right? So he's using that imagery to join a conversation on Twitter. So I couldn't resist. And Eurovision, of course, is having their competition, and the Roop is the Lithuanian entry into Eurovision's song contest. And of course, it's called Discotheque, but the main line is, it's okay to dance alone. So I shared that with him, and he liked it, thought it was funny, and so I'll share it with you. It's okay to dance alone, folks. If you're out there on the hill dancing, it's okay to dance alone. Dave Chappelle, Doctor of Education, at Dave Chappelle. Who's the best teacher you ever had, and what grade did they teach in it? Thought about answering his questions like, well, but no, in second grade, it was Mrs. Dawson. And then, of course, in high school, it was Mrs. Lonis. And then, of course, in grad school, it was Dr. Boyd. You know, it's more like I had a favorite one for different sections of through school. It wasn't just any one best teacher, right? But he's looking for answers to the questions. So you can hit him up at Dave Schmino and shoot him an answer to who your best teacher you ever had was. Ryan Hazen, you know this guy.
I do. Right. I like Ryan quite a bit. I think he's a neat guy.
At Mr. Hazen, here's my latest piece of digital artwork. It's called How to Upload Files to Hashtag Moodle using drag and drop, a.gif.
I was wondering. I was waiting for it. How are you going to pronounce that?
Yeah. At .gif. and so I included the link to the animation that he created. And I thought that was a really cool way of saying, you know, because you could post this to a website or to parents and go, it's even students, right? This is how I want you to turn the assignment in. And so I thought I'm going to look for more of his pieces that he's created, because I would like to steal them to start creating a visual way for students to go, oh, that's what he means. Right. Because the middle schoolers, that's what they need. Dave Schmidow again. Admin. This is, and of course, Dave is a principal's principal, right? So he's going to give some advice to admins, and it is, admin, this month, instead of doing walkthroughs, do tagouts. Go to a teacher's classroom, take over, and send them on a walkthrough through rooms of their peers. They will learn more from them than you. You will learn more from teaching than preaching. Cool idea, although I'm not sure I want somebody just showing up and walking through my room going, unless, of course, it's somebody walking behind a podcast presentation. She's welcome to walk through that anytime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Try to know what I'm talking about. Jay McTeague. All right, Jay McTeague, it's time for Curriculum Mapping 3.0. Check out my latest blog that makes the case for a needed shift from curriculum to content coverage. Jay McTeague was a compatriot of Grant Wiggins. For reference, change your content coverage to more deliberate focus on authentic performance and what students can do with their learning. So he goes through and he talks about the progression from curriculum mapping from the 1970s, late 70s, early 80s, to where it became popular in 93 with Heidi Hayes Jacobs, to actually stuff like being done. And he says, maybe we don't say, what is the teacher doing? Maybe what we say is, what is the student doing? And we focus our curriculum on their performance of the standards rather than how we're teaching the standards, because it's more a better reflection, or not more, but it's a better reflection of. So I think the shift, he's starting to take the shift off of what the teacher's doing and put it onto what the student's doing, which I had a superintendent years ago saying, it's not until students are 5 years out of school till they realize, oh, yeah, I learned that in high school is beneficial. It's almost like a way of doing that before we have to say, you know, all right, you've been 5 years out. Now, talk to me about the schooling you got. Mm-hmm. It's a quicker way to do a analysis. Karen Bosch at Carly B. Student AR book scene created in AR Maker app shows showing Joseph and his coat of many colors. Thanks to Jacob Woolock, Woolcock, for your great tutorial. And that's the name of the student who did it. The kid blog links and that sort of thing. And what it is a student using an iPad, and you referenced something like this earlier in the show, or in the pre-show. And I don't know if you don't have to talk about it here, but it made me think about this. And I actually had this in here before we talked about it, where a student has created an AR environment that other students, then you can share with other students. And it's a book report. It's flat, two-dimensional objects though. But as you walk around, though, the room, in this case, a living room, when it sees a sofa, it puts so-and-so on a sofa. When it sees the floor, it does these things around the floor. And so it'll take a recognizable space and automatically insert things in AR so this can be shared across multiple settings, I guess is the appropriate word for it. So I thought it was creative, but it's, again, it's made with Apple's AR kit, which means I believe you have to have iPads in order to do that, correct?
Yes. Or an iPhone with
LiDAR.
Newer iPhones or iPads, depending on how they've created it. But basically, yes, that is built into the newer iPhones and iPads, which there's millions of them out there at this point. So,
ooh. I'll have to see if I can find one on I have an addiction for tablet devices. Katie Hurley at Katie F. Hurley. Tip from a middle schooler. Sometimes you don't want the solution. Sometimes you just want a hug. More hugs, please. Yeah. Don't forget to get your hug over at hashtag MSChat every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as Troy says, the Twitter never stops. If you also send us a comment or, give us a 5-star rating on, it could be a 4.9 star rating too on iTunes. You might be able to get a hug from Eileen.
That's true.
So, keep, give us some ratings, and also, don't forget to, Follow hashtag MS Chat on Thursday on Twitter. And as Troy says, the Twitter never stops. Wonderful resource for your learning.
Yeah, and just a couple of things real quick here. One is, ISTE has a channel on YouTube.
Ooh.
And I know ISTE has started doing professional development, and I did some professional development courses, and those are pay for opportunities.
Right.
So you get the opportunity to give them hard-earned cash, and they give you back high-quality professional development. But they also have a bunch of resources that are available on YouTube just on their channel. So if you're looking for some ideas, sometimes ISTE has some things that are good at prompting thought and, you know, giving you an opportunity to think and talk about what's going on, looking at some different things as well. So, and there's quite a few resources, like hundreds, and they're broken down into different things. There are tips for online learning, ISTE standards, real ideas from real educators, TED Masterclass sessions at ISTE 2019,
ISTE
course trailers. So there's a variety of things, and a lot of them are short. So that you can take a look at those as well. And like I said, there's a lot of them. So you can take a look at OER's impact on professional learning. There's some things on OER, which I keep hoping that we'll get more invested in OER, because I think we could take advantage of that as well. But it's something there to check out, and you don't have to... It can wet the whistle sometimes, or at least give you some practical information.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
All right.
Gucci Mane. Are you a fan of Gucci Mane?
Well, the early educator that invented the very famous Gucci Gucci Goo.
Slightly different. Gucci Mane is a rapper, partly known for trap music, which is, leads into some other things that you may not want to discuss in school setting, but your kids probably know who Gucci Mane is. And it's Gucci Mane, M-A-N-E.
So. Yeah, more your style music than mine, I think.
Not really, but although on the continuum, I might agree with you that it would be closer to me than you. That would be true.
Yes.
I would think, yes. Yeah. They've come up with Project Gucciberg. Yeah, we've talked about Project Gutenberg, correct?
I love Project Gutenberg, yes.
Yeah, all of the lots of classic, they're public domain books that are available.
Yeah.
Well, there's a group that took Project Gutenberg and deepfake AI and has mashed them together.
Oh.
So what they've done is this is an AI project which uses a deepfake of Gucci Mane's voice to read classic literature.
Oh, dear.
So it's... something that's kind of interesting there, because this is not Gucci Mane reading it. This is AI using his voice to read classic literature. So if you go over there, they have Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Pride and Prejudice, A Modest Proposal. They have also, by the way, redone the covers, involving making them very hip-hop Gucci Mane focused.
And they did.
So, and you can play like the first chapter, I think, of of most of them. But it is interesting to say and I love part of this is we didn't write the books and we deep faked the voice. Is this copyright infringement? Is it identity theft? All of the training data used to make Project Gutenberg were publicly available on the web. Gutenberg lives in that gray area where everything's new and anything goes. So it's interesting. It is very, very interesting. I think it's something that is deep fakes are something that I think we're going to continue seeing developed and, you know, maybe having those conversations and kids being aware of those that, hey, this isn't real. He didn't read this. So, I would almost play and ask them their response and see if any of them say, this doesn't sound real. You know?
Mm-hmm. So. It's interesting because one of the things that popped up in my feed this week was an article talking about how TikTok deepfakes are actually working on middle schoolers and teenagers because they don't have that ability, the frontal lobes to filter out some of the signals that say, hey, this isn't real. In the case they used there, it was a Tom Cruise lookalike. Mm-hmm. And somebody deep faked Tom Cruise to the point that people are stalking him in his community thinking he's Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. But they were talking about, look, this is a thing on TikTok and it's going to get even more so before it's over. So this is an interesting twist on it, though. I love the way that, you know, so let's deep fake him and trick him into listening to literature.
Yes. Listening to literature is the way to go. So
you could fold it maybe and put it in your pocket.
Well, one of the other things that I found this week, which I thought was interesting, is the Folded Map Project. And this is a look at equity and how equity and segregation works and looks. So they did a photographic study, and then it ended up evolving into a multimedia exploration to have discussions about how cities are, and this is Chicago specifically, but specifically how racial, social, and institutional conditions segregate the city. So, and it's an ongoing project as well. So, but take a look at that, and especially social studies people, and looking at things holistically as well. It's just it's an interesting project to look at. So, another interesting project to look at is the Culture Translator.
Oh, yes, Culture Translator from Axis. So they posted a couple things. The first one is the original problematic fave, and I had not heard about this popular Tumblr site or account. Popular Tumblr account called Your Fave is Problematic. And apparently it was a site that would rant about and against a variety of different things, and it was prolific. It turns out that the person who ran the account was a high school girl at the time in the early 2010s, teens. And she was using the account to actually kind of sort through her grief after her older sister's death. But most people didn't realize that it was a high school girl behind the account. And a lot of the angst and the anger and things that she was projecting on the account was more of a cry for help than it was raging against these various sorts of things. It turns out she said all she was doing, she was a 17-year-old girl who was just Googling things and happened to just feel very sad and very alone. But sometimes when those things are happening, we need to look past that and go, here's somebody who's hurting. Mm-hmm. And we need to help them. Slang of the week. Culture Translator Axis also posted slang of the week. The slang of the week is fire. Now, when Troy looks at fire, he says, quick, put my computer out. No, he doesn't do that. Save the server, he says that. Fire here is used to describe something exciting, incredible, or fun, like we would say cool. Sometimes yeah. It's simply indicated by the fire emoji. So, for example, you might hear a kid say, have you heard the latest T-Swift track? That song is straight fire. So there's your slang for the week. Thank you to Axis for providing that. Yep. I stole it from him.
Yep. And I'll finish with Todd Radiker. Rademacher. Thomas Rademacher. Tom Rad is what he goes by, has an incomplete yet heavily annotated list of things that don't help me as a teacher right now, including donuts, guided medication, the phrase, thank you for all you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Icebreakers, positivity, changes, promises of safety, giving up on the big stuff, and standardized tests. So I thought that was something that was fun, as well. And I will warn you right now that there is a swear word at the very end of the, at the article, but it is in, it's kind of just something that's interesting. So we've never shared that. We have the links to all of that so you can find out what swear word is used, as well as all of the other good things that we're talking about over at middleschoolmatters.com.
It's like Where's Waldo, you know?
There's important things that you need to learn. And in middle school, where the swear words are is one of those things.
It's hidden.
Yeah. So, but head over to Middle School Matters. Head over to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. We would greatly appreciate that. Give us a call. Shoot us an email. See if you can earn yourself the Eileen Award as well. And of course, listen in for the wonderful Dave Bidlowski's contributions. We really appreciate that. We'll start on the next 500 shows. So without further ado, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care.